children of God, hear now the story of the tragic death of the first king of Israel, a man of whom the prophets say that even God repented, having seated on the throne. Saul, son of Kish, was on a wild goose chase. Some of his father's donkeys had strayed from the herd, and he had been searching for those cussed animals from the hills to the lowlands, his rangy form eating up miles by the score. But the search had been going on now for 3 straight days. And not knowing what else to do, having no other ideas, Saul went to consult a seer, a holy man, a prophet whose eyes could pierce through reality to what stands behind all things. In later years, I wonder if Saul came to regret that choice, whether he wished that he had never spoken to that mysterious man at all, simply returning empty-handed to his simple life. For the words that the seer spoke to Saul that day would forever change his life, as well as dominate the history of Israel for a generation. Saul, of the house of Benjamin, all of Israel's desires are fixed on you, and you shall rule them as their king. King, the king of Israel? Such a thing had never happened before. Since the time when the people fled Egypt in the wilderness, they had never been ruled by a king. And Saul was certain he was not the first man to rule in that way. So much so that on his coronation day, when the only word on the people's lips was Saul and Saul and Saul, he was found hiding in the baggage of a caravan from his own coronation. But when he took his stand among the people, he stood head and shoulders taller than anyone else, a powerful man, a warrior. And a warrior was all that the people were looking for in a king. Now, if Saul had been afraid that he could not be king, those doubts were swallowed up in the red haze of battle. As a leader of troops, Saul was unmatched, dealing death and defeat to all the enemies of Israel in battle after glorious battle. He defeated cruel King Nahash, who gouged out the right eye of everyone he captured. Saul put to flight the 7 kings of Zobah and dashed the army of the Moabites against his army's shields. But mostly, Saul fought interminable battles against Israel's neighbor to the west, the Philistines, who worshipped Baal of storm and thunder. The battles were fierce between the Israelites and Philistines. They fought at Michmash and Geba. They fought in the mountain pass between the great peaks of Bozel Senah. They fought in the hills of Ephraim, and their battle spilled out into the plains outside Beth-El. Each time they met, wherever Saul turned, he routed his enemies, and the people sang songs to their glorious king, Saul. That is, until one day. One day that had dawned red, like so many others. On that day, it was the Amalekites. It was the Amalekites who stood arrayed for battle facing Saul. They were an ancient foe with grudges that stretched back generations far beyond living memory, stretching back to when the people still wandered in the wilderness and ate manna from the ground. But the Amalekites that day were no match for Saul. His army was many thousands strong, and the battle devolved into sheer slaughter. The army of Israel carried away all the riches that they could, leaving the Amalekites stoked in ruin and disaster. But there was something wrong. The seer, that seer again, the one who had made Saul king, he stormed into Saul's ever-busy war room in a rage and demanded of Saul, "Why have you not destroyed the Amalekites as I told you?" "I did," Saul replied. "I defeated them just as all the others. I even captured their king, and I've taken great spoils." But it was not enough for this seer who had given Saul the kingdom. You should not have left a single one of them alive. You should have wiped them out, every one of them, because of what their ancestors did to our people. Instead of taking revenge, you take plunder and hope to ransom back their king for gold. And because you have not followed what I have told you of the will of God, the kingdom will be ripped away from you and given to one who is more worthy than you. King Saul was aghast. He did not know what to do. He begged the seer to forgive him for his sin. He begged the seer to intercede on his behalf with God, but the seer would not. He was staunch. Though Saul begged for forgiveness, the seer did not forgive him, but stormed away, and Saul would never see him alive again. Because word soon reached Saul that the seer had died. And in death, he carried with him down to Sheol any chance of reversing what seemed a terrible curse upon Saul's kingship. The dead man's words echoed in Saul's mind. The kingdom will be ripped away from you. And something inside of Saul changed. Something inside of Saul snapped. It was like his luck had turned. Like a darkness had fallen across his mind. Part of Saul's spirit withered away and left a gaping hole into which something foul and fetid crawled. A vile spirit of tormented rage would seize hold of Saul and leave him howling, uncontrollable in his tents. There was only one thing that could calm him. One thing only that could make him his old self again. The music of the lyre. The harmonies of strings resonating one with another, reinforcing waves vibrating in sympathy with the air. All the world and all its troubles were absorbed into that music. The darkness that lived inside of Saul would coil up and sleep like a serpent. And for a time, Saul would once again be left in peace. Saul would return to himself because of the music of the lyre. A lyre played by a young man named David. Saul loved him dearly, this young man, David. He was red-cheeked and handsome. Saul found him a wife from among his own daughters, and for a short, charmed season, everything was well again. But David proved to be skillful in more than just playing the lyre. He was himself a brilliant warrior, strong and crafty. He was so successful that Saul put David in charge of the entire army. David's star was on the rise, and when he would lead the battles of Israel, his victories would be meteoric. Saul's glory days paled in comparison. One day, when the army marched home victorious, Saul heard the people coming out to cheer them. But the voices of the people were no longer singing for Saul. The people were singing songs about David. David. David, worth 10 Sauls in battle. They sang only of David now. At court that night, Saul was in a dark and deadly mood when David began to play the lyre, as he did most every night, it seemed. The seer's prophecy rang in Saul's ears. The kingdom will be ripped away and given to someone more worthy. Who could it be except for this David? All they did was sing to David's glory. David and his sword. David and his women. David and his 10,000s. And can't he play the song? Can't he play the song, this lyre, so sweetly? David's playing did not sound so sweet to Saul. Unstoppable David, incomparable David, insufferable David, with his interminable playing and his incoherent strumming inculcating itself into Saul's mind, had there always been that mocking undertone to David's music, and had he only just heard it now? Or had David's seditious fingers always loosed such dissonant, snickering laughter with every single note? Ugh! Will nothing make him stop? Saul grabbed his spear and flung it with all his strength at David, hoping to pin his guts to the wall. But David skipped to the side, and Saul's spear stuck thrumming a foot into the stone wall. And David fled out into the countryside. Hunting down David became Saul's obsession. He left off ruling the kingdom, paid his duties no attention, and took 3,000 of his best men and pursued David out into the wilderness. But David always stayed one step ahead. Saul chased him like mad Captain Ahab across Jeshimon and Ziph. David eluded Saul in the wilderness of Horesh and slipped away into the mountains of Maon. Once Saul had had him in his grasp, trapped on a hill with his forces closing in on both sides, outnumbered, outmaneuvered, a man, just a man. If you prick him, he will bleed, and Saul aimed to see him bleed. But at that very moment, a messenger arrived for Saul. The Philistines were attacking. It was a huge force, and Saul was needed urgently at the front. Why? Why had Saul's luck turned so sour? Why at that very moment? Why couldn't the Philistines have left off for just one day? Saul had to leave, and he left David on that cursed rock, safe as if he were in his mother's arms, while Saul marched back to war. But when Saul laid his eyes on the Philistine army, his heart melted in his chest like wax. His army was overmatched, badly overmatched. While Saul had been off chasing David, the Philistines had been making preparations. They had been gathering an army whose purpose could only be revenge, to revenge themselves for all of their recent losses. In trying to eliminate David as a threat to his throne, Saul had been setting in motion the very forces that would rip his throne out from under him, an army of the Philistines. The sun set on the battle lines, and night found Saul desperate for a way to salvage the battle that he could no more stop from coming than he could stop the dawn from breaking. Saul stalked out of camp and into the night, searching for forces that were dark and elemental, searching for a spiritualist, a medium, a necromancer. Saul was looking for a way to speak with the dead. Saul had himself outlawed such practices early in his rule. He had driven out the necromancers because such things are forbidden in the law of Moses. But one idea was consuming Saul's mind, burning so brightly it outshone all else. That seer, it had all begun with that seer, the one who had made him king. Saul had to speak to the seer. If anyone would know a way out of it, then the seer would know. Even if he had to bend heaven and earth, he would try to speak with the seer. Maybe there was some way still to crawl out from under his cursed fortune and retain his kingdom. Saul found a woman who lived in the hills. A witch who lived out far in the country and who was said to be a medium for spirits. Saul told her whom he sought after from among the company of death. And in the ink of night, the world of life sunk down toward the upward stretching mouth of death, and through the ellipsis where they met walked a figure of an old man wrapped in a prophet's robes. It was the selfsame seer who had set Saul's fate in motion. Saul stood before the ghost of the seer and said to him, "God has turned away from me. I have summoned you to tell me what I should do." The seer's ghost spoke to Saul. "Why so hasty to speak with me, Saul? This very day, you and your sons will be joining me in death, and your army will fall to the hands of the Philistines. This very day, the kingdom is torn away from you and given over to David. Saul walked into the battle like a man already dead, oblivious to the world outside as time flowed past him like a stream. His fate had come, a fate made manifest by what he'd done to stop fate's churning wheel. Saul, once so feared by Philistine, now safe faced those selfsame foes with no hope of escape, an unscalable mountain, an unconquerable enemy. Saul never tried and never could make up for all the slaughter he had done. As lines collapsed and archers fled and cavalry dissolved, Saul stood alone and nothing held. The center, not the flanks. The arrows leapt from string to air and from the air into Saul's once invulnerable chest. A king so gloried now, fletched in arrows like a target at the games. The mercy stroke that came was swung by hand of an Amalekite. Must it be Amalekite? Must Saul's last dying thoughts be of that fateful, cursed day, the day on which Saul's fate had hinged and turned on him like a trap? An Amalekite it was, whose hand flashed to the sun before that hungry steel came falling, falling, falling into its crimson home. That is how Saul, son of Kish, the first king of Israel, met his death. A man who had gone out searching for his father's donkeys and found a kingdom instead. A man made and then unmade by the words of a prophet. An ordinary person from an unimportant family, driven to madness, clinging to a kingdom he had never sought. Mortal. Simply mortal, gloriously mortal, shiningly mortal. And the death of Saul, the first king of Israel, is worthy to be mourned.